It's 4:06. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Cynthia Schuster, in for Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, it's not how many hours you put in at the job or what time you're there. It's the results that matter. That's the philosophy of the results-oriented workplace. We'll hear how it works.
First, today is the seventh day of the ongoing conflict between Israel and Gaza. Yesterday morning, thousands of Palestinians fled northern Gaza after warnings from Israel's military that the area would be targeted with airstrikes. They defied suggestions from Hamas that they remain in their homes.
173 Palestinians have been killed as of this morning in the conflict. That's according to the Palestinian Health Ministry, with more than 1,200 wounded. Air raid sirens went off in Jerusalem and Tel Aviv last week, with Gaza missiles mostly landing in open areas or blocked by Israel's Iron Dome defense system. Yesterday, rockets fired badly wounded a 16-year-old in the Israeli city of Ashkelon. Joining us from the ground in Gaza is New York Times London Bureau Chief Steve Erlanger. We spoke with him earlier today. Stephen, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you.
So what is the atmosphere like today in Gaza City and northern Gaza?
Well, it was a fairly noisy night, but there were not any tragedies of the kind we've had over the last days. I mean, one wants to be careful saying that. But, you know, there was no incident of disabled people being killed or an extended family. People are being hurt and obviously dying. But the Israelis were mostly bombing Hamas training camps and rocket launching sites. The most interesting thing was their leafleting and telephoning the residents in northern Gaza around Beit Lahia, where a lot of the rockets are launched from, telling them to evacuate their homes because more strikes were coming in a large but temporary fashion. And that caused a sort of a panicked exodus more toward the south. Hamas had urged people to stay in their homes, saying this was propaganda from Israel, but many people left, and some of them waving like flags. They traveled by vehicles, by donkey carts, by foot, and sought refuge mostly in schools and buildings owned by the UN refugee agency that deals with the Palestinians called UNRWA. And about 20,000 Palestinians are now sheltering in UNRWA facilities.
The Hamas facilities, Israel has said it's difficult to avoid civilian casualties because these facilities are located in civilian areas near mosques, hospitals. Is that right? Are these rocket launching sites so close to civilian life?
Well, Gaza's pretty, I mean, it's not the most crowded place in the world, but there's a lot of people concentrated. There are big families in compounds. And yes, a lot of these rocket launchers are actually underground, and they're shot through slits in the ground, and they tend to be in open areas between buildings in which people live. They tend to be apartment buildings or three- or four-story houses. So you get this kind of, like, a lot between three or four houses under which rocket launchers are sometimes placed. And then the people who fire the launchers do it from underground, and they enter the tunnels through other houses. So the whole point, you know, it's a clever strategy, I mean, of Hamas and Islamic Jihad, is to try to disguise their launching places and to put them in the middle of crowded places because they know, you know, that Israelis' air force is going to try not to hit too many civilians. They hit enough as it is, but their intention is obviously to try to hit only combatants. The problem with war is you make mistakes, and it depends on how good your intelligence is, and the best kind of targeted killing sometimes goes wrong. And this is not to, you know, absolve anybody, but the fact is there really is an effort on the part of Israel not hit a lot of civilians, but they do.
And going the other way, there have been, I think, something in the neighborhood of 1,000 rockets launched toward Israel, many caught by the Iron Dome defense system, others inaccurate landing in unpopulated areas, evidently. What is life like on the Israeli side of this attack?
Well, there's a lot of stress and tension. I mean, it's very easy to look at Israel as this, you know, technologically advanced. I mean, compared to Gaza, I mean, it's like two different worlds, of course. You know, Israel has air defenses, it has air raid sirens, it has shelters, it has this Iron Dome anti-missile system. But, you know, from the warning until you get to the shelter, you may have 10, 15 seconds, 20 seconds. And it's not like you're going to get hit on the head, necessarily, but it creates havoc among civilian life. And schools get shut and open-air concerts get canceled. Neil Young had to cancel a concert because the army said there were too many people in an open space. So it creates a lot of tension. I mean, very few Israelis, by comparison, have been hurt. But the tension in southern Israel certainly is quite high, even if I wouldn't say it's quite as high as it is all through Gaza.
This is a conflict that it seems like both sides backed into. Nobody went in with a plan saying we want a military conflict. How did we get here from where we were just a couple months ago?
Well, it's kind of like the old joke in New Hampshire. You can't get there from here, you know. These things have a context. I mean, what got us here was first the failure, the collapse of the U.S.-sponsored peace talks. Israel then decided not to follow through on its promise to release another tranche of Palestinian prisoners. Then you had the horrible kidnapping and murder of three Israeli teenagers who were hitchhiking home to their settlement. And Israel blamed Hamas in the West Bank for that kidnap and murder without giving much evidence, I have to say. It may be true, but they started to arrest a lot of people in the West Bank who are affiliated with Hamas. And they arrested a bunch of prisoners who they had released under a deal with Egypt and Hamas that got the release of the kidnapped Israeli soldier Gilad Shalit. Now, Egypt had promised that those people, once released, would not be rearrested, but Egypt's changed quite a lot lately. And so about 50 or so Hamas prisoners who'd been released under that earlier deal were rearrested. And then some rockets started being fired from Gaza, not by Hamas, but like a day later, Hamas fired a huge barrage toward Israel. I think it was Sunday, if I'm not wrong. And then Israel retaliated Monday and began this operation. So they kind of fell into it. It's nothing I think either side especially wanted, but it's worth saying that Hamas in Gaza feel very suffocated because the change in Egypt, the taking over by al-Sisi, what I consider a military coup, though he was sort of elected as president later. He's very anti-Hamas, anti-Muslim Brotherhood. He sealed the border with Gaza. He shut down the crossings. He shut down the tunnels. That starved Hamas of goods, of taxes. And Israel has also tightened its controls over the Gaza border after they had discovered a tunnel running into Israel by Hamas. So Hamas, feeling kind of isolated, has been going through this unity government with Fatah. This all gets very complicated, but they've got nothing out of that. Their employees in Gaza haven't been paid. Nobody's been paid in Gaza for like 2 or 3 months now. There's a banking problem. The ATM machines aren't working. There's a shortage of cash. And Hamas is feeling suffocated by, you know, Israel, blockaded by Egypt. The sea is patrolled by the Israelis. And I think Hamas is striking out to try to get a better deal, to try to, release some of the pressure on it by trying to push Israel into a negotiated ceasefire, which is, I think, is where we always will end up.
You've been reporting from Gaza. What kind of things are you hearing from Palestinian civilians, people not directly involved with Hamas?
Well, they're afraid, first of all, and they also feel very isolated. When you're in Gaza, you can't leave. I mean, nobody lets you leave and go anywhere. You know, you're in a way stateless. And if you're a male under the age of 35, it's very hard to get a permit to leave. Egyptians won't let you leave anymore, really. So you're stuck there. It's not like you can emigrate or, you know, get away. Hamas, you know, is not hugely popular, but it probably has, guessing, 25, 30, 40% support among the population. It was elected once, certainly. People do believe that Israel is at fault, that Israel is the aggressor, that it's important to resist what they call the occupation, partly in defense of the West Bank, which certainly is occupied, and partly because to be passive seems weak in the face of Israeli power. So there's a general support for this idea. But ordinary people want what ordinary people want everywhere, which is peace and, you know, a chance to make some money and to make their children's lives better. And they know this is not that. So there's a kind of quiet unhappiness with this and a feeling like we're in a bad movie being rerun again and people are dying. You know, lots of people are dying and they ask themselves for what particular reason might they be dying. But if you ask them directly, they're very reluctant to directly criticize Hamas.
And before I let you go, just briefly, one fear, there are apparently Israeli land forces massing on the border, a possibility of army raids to try to get to these Hamas rocket sites. How likely do you see that? How much of an escalation would that be then?
Well, Israel has a bunch of choices. There's a lot of pressure, particularly from the army and people. Actually, you know, pushing Netanyahu is actually fairly prudent about these things, pushing him to try to deal with Hamas once and for all, which in my view is impossible. They would advocate a big ground operation with air support to really clean Gaza of rocket launchers, blah, blah, blah. Because the rockets go so much farther, all of Gaza is a launching pad now. It's not just northern Gaza. Israel used to go to northern Gaza and do some of these operations, but now, and they've always been afraid or reluctant, certainly, to go into the big cities and fight. It's a very bad way to fight, and you end up losing lots of soldiers and lots of civilians die. And, I just don't think the West is going to tolerate that much bloodshed. So part of the Israeli massing on the border is, you know, psychological, to prove to Hamas that this is serious and that Hamas should come to terms and negotiate something that stops the rocket fire for a long period of time, not just for 9 months or a year. But Israel also has the option of doing limited incursions, staying out of the big cities, and just particularly in the north and around Rafah, on the Egyptian border where a lot of rockets are, to go and try to go in on the ground and clean out some of those, to pull Hamas into actually fighting, and to punish Hamas and kill as many as possible. That's the debate going on in Israel. Well, for Hamas, the military wing seems to be in control right now because the political leaders, you can't find them in Gaza. They're underground. They're not answering their phones. They're, you know, don't want to kill themselves. Israel has said that they will target them. So, you know, we're moving, I think, toward a ceasefire, but it is always possible that the Israeli government will decide to throw the dice.
Stephen, we'll leave it there for now. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you very, very much.
We spoke with New York Times London Bureau Chief Stephen Erlanger earlier today. He joined us from Gaza.